Okay. Now, we've been discussing the life of Rebbe Leibler, in the context of his life, we've been learning some of the pieces from Teres Amis. We were discussing at the end last week Rebbe Leibler's remarkable devotion, not only to the mitzvahs, but in a certain way even more amazing was his devotion to hachana l'mitzvah. Hachana l'mitzvah means to preparing for mitzvahs. The preparation that the preparation of Rebbe Leibler for a mitzvah was something which was known to be extraordinary, to be unique. The piece that you have in front of you in the Teres Amis, you see the thing that you have, it's the third page. It says on top, on the right-hand side, it says Suda Shlishis, page 72. Okay, look inside. There's an important Torah here. I mean, it's actually a time that we just went through, and it's a time that's generally not understood. What does it really mean? So look inside. The Yisku, it's very often, we're going to talk about this more later on, but very often, Reb Leibler would explain Zmiris from Shabbos. This is a trademark of Reb Leibler, but not so much in Teres Amis, but in his other Sefer Imre Amis, which is almost entirely a commentary on the Zmiris of Shabbos. Reb Leibler had a tremendous love for the Shabbos Zmiris. It's something which you don't see in the other Svarim, where he goes through all of the Zmiris. Friday night, Shabbos, Shalosh Udos, Motzei Shabbos. So he would find Ramazim, he would find hints for what was happening that Shabbos and in the parasha, in the Zmiris of Shabbos. So here, there's one that we say here in Shul, part of Bevoh Me'edom at the end, V'yizkil Razbon v'nei banim oskim b'Torah v'mitzvos, that the Jewish people, we should be worthy, that we should see our children and grandchildren oskim b'Torah v'mitzvos, that they should be occupied with Torah and with mitzvahs. So Rebbe Leibler writes, Inyan Asik b'Torah uv mitzvahs. What does it mean, Asik? If it was a question of learning, then the word in Hebrew would be lomdim Torah, learning Torah. If it's a question of observing mitzvahs, then it would be mekayim mitzvahs. But this idea of oiskim b'Torah uv mitzvahs, what does it mean? The word Asik, to be occupied with, he says, "In asik b'tarav mitzvus l'chari le'nimsa le'chiyav rak l'kaim ha-mitzvus." The only obligation we have is to observe mitzvus, ve'lulmod Torah, and to learn Torah. What's the asik? What does it mean to be busy with? V'agam shebe'asik ha-tarav nimsa remez b'tarav v'shinantam l'vanecha. Now, the truth is, he says, that as far as being occupied with the study of Torah, that's hinted to in the Torah when it says v'shinantam l'vanecha, and you shall teach, and you shall teach your sons. V'lumartam oisam es b'neichem, shu inyin hachon les asikim oyad she yilmedu. V'lumartam oisam es b'neichem means not only the act of actually learning with the children, but all that's necessary to prepare the children that they should be able to understand how to learn more. So we understand that there's an occupation of the study of Torah. We understand that. He says, and this is the lashon of the Mishnah, we find the language of the Mishnah in the brackets of a parak basmid Rosh Hashanah, of misaskim imohim ad sheyilmedu. Misaskim imohim ad sheyilmedu means that you have to be shrewd, you have to be very cunning to make the children interested in wanting to learn. You have to entice the children. So we understand that when it comes to learning, there's a concept of esekatar, to be occupied. When you learn with your children, you need to work with the children and convince them that it's important to learn. Therefore, in the bracha, in the morning, is lasak b'divrei Torah, to be preoccupied. It's not just a question of learning the material. When it comes to learning Torah, studying Torah, it means that all that's involved in preparing and making the children and the students more interested in ourselves. Aval esek b'mitzvus. However, what is the meaning of esek b'mitzvus? Le'nimtzu remez al zeh b'Torah, that's not hinted at in the Torah. V'yesh loimer, it means to be busy with mitzvus. We understand what it means to observe a mitzvah. What is the meaning of being busy with a mitzvah? Of being occupied with a mitzvah? So Rebbe Leibler writes, V'yesh lomer, where is it hinted at in the Torah? Hu b'pasuk u'lekachtem lachem b'yom harisha. It's hinted at in the Torah in the pasuk that says u'lekachtem lachem b'yom harisha, where the Torah commands us to take a lulav and an esrog on the first day. Now, obviously, there's a very major problem with that pasuk. What does it mean b'yom harisha? Sukkot does not come out the first day of anything. Comes out the 15th. So what is the v'lakakl lachem b'yom harishon? It doesn't mean the first day of Sukkot. That doesn't fit in grammatically to the pasuk. You have to first tell us where you are. So it doesn't fit into the Hebrew. So if you'd already tell us that there's a yontiv, then you could say, but if there's no yontiv yet, you can't say b'yom harishon. So Chazal learned from there. Chazal learned, Amr Chazal, v'chi rishon hu? V'alo tesvavu. Chazal said, is it the first day? It's not the first day of Tishrei, it's the 15th of Tishrei. El Arishon Lechesh Ben Avoinus. It's the first day that Hashem begins to count again our Averus. It's an amazing thing. It's the first day that Hashem, in other words, it sounds like, from Yom Kippur to the first day of Sukkot, there's time off. That doesn't mean, God forbid, that you can do whatever you want, Chas V'Chalil. But that somehow the Chesh Ben Avoinus, the way that Hashem counts the Averus, that begins only after that 5-day period between Yom Kippur and then Sukkot, Chazal had this mysterious drasha that it's called, Sukkot is called the first day. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak has a whole amazing explanation about that, that Sukkot means to come to Hashem out of love. Therefore, Hashem, now we want Hashem to count all the old Averis, because now the Averis are transformed into mitzvahs. Because Yom Kippur means the returning to Hashem out of fear. When you return out of fear, an Aver is forgiven, but it's still, it's not counted, but it's not transformed into a mitzvah. When a Jew does tshuva out of love, and besimcha, when you return to Hashem, then all your averus are transformed into mitzvahs. That only happens on Sukkot. Therefore, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak says, that's why Chazal tell us that it's the first day that Hashem counts the averus. It doesn't mean God forbid as an averus. It means when all the averus are now transformed into mitzvahs. Because Sukkot means to come back out of ahava, and then all your averus are transformed. But Rabbi Levi says, the meaning of this is, on Yom Kippur, Rabbi Leibler says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mitzrat L'chol Nafsh Yisrael. He forgives, he becomes appeased with all Yidden, with all Jews. Hashem forgives them for everything that took place in the past. V'nitarim al-Haba, and they are purified and ready for the future. K'maisha Nemar, Eshma Ma'yidabra HaKel Hashem, K'yidabra Sholom Al-Amo, Vel Chasidav. That it says in the pasuk that I will hear, I will listen. What does Hashem say to His people after Yom Kippur? Hashem speaks to His people words of peace, which means that Hashem makes with the Jewish people in Yom Kippur. He makes shalom. The essence of Yom Kippur is that Hashem is baruch and the Jewish people make peace with each other. Vayeshuvu l'kislo, and they will not, and the Jewish people shall not return to their mistakes. That means mekan lahab in the future. Now, be'elu ha'arba yomim sheben Yom Kippur l'sukkos, these 4 days, the time between the yontiv of Yom Kippur and Sukkos, ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mechashev atzmo in Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what does it mean that he doesn't count averus? How could that be? What does it mean it's rishon l'chesh ben avoinus? So Rebbe Leibler says the reason is, he says, mipnei shehem oiskim b'mitzvah sukkah v'hamina. During these days, the Jewish people are very, very busy preparing for Sukkot. Sukkot requires a great deal of preparation between the hachanis of the sukkah itself and acquiring the arba minim and getting ready for yontiv. So because the Jewish people are busy during that time, that's why it says the loshen of Chazal and of the poskim is oisek b'sukkos of the gamaluva. We're busy. We're preoccupied with the sukkah and with the arba minim. Hagam she'ein az zman kiyumam, even though we're not actually observing the mitzvah of sukkah and of lulav and esrog during those 4 days. Notice what Rabbi Leibler is showing. He wants to say that in the Torah there's a source to indicate, there's a hint that, to this concept of esik b'mitzvahs. Now you remember I told you last week that Rabbi Leibler would sometimes prepare for 6, 7, 8 hours for davening. When it came to performing a bris, he was a moral. He would usually make the bris milah a very short time before sunset. It means that he would perform the bris only before sunset. His hachana for mitzvahs is unbelievable. So Reb Leibler Rabbi Leibel is asking, where do we see this concept of hachon, of preparing for a mitzvah? Where do we find this alluded to in Chumash? So Rabbi Leibel says, this 4-day period, between the 5 days, if you count the day, this period of time between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kivyochel does not count any averis during that time. How could that be? So the explanation is, the Gemara says, because the Jewish people are busy, the Medrash says rather, the Jewish people are oiskim, we're busy with our lulav, with our sukkah, and so on. So Leibel explains that, that's not a time, we're not mekayim those mitzvahs, we're not observing those mitzvahs during that period. So what are we busy with? So he explains, Hagam she'ein ozman kiyumam, that's not when mekayim the mitzvahs, we're not observing them. Raka'esek v'hachona shel mitzvah. What takes place during that time is being occupied with the mitzvah, preparing for the mitzvah, going shopping, looking, taking the stuff out of the sukkah out of the garage, and now people try to do it a little bit earlier. But getting ready for sukkahs, getting ready for the yontif, that's called esek v'hachona shel mitzvah. And he says, Hu yakar ma'od lifnei Hashem Yisbarach. The preparations that a Jew makes for a mitzvah is very precious in Hashem's eyes. And now in brackets, he has, there's a note here from his son, from Rav Avraham. So Rav Avraham says, Zecharani shekein diber b'kotcho, I remember my father's holy words. Yoyse miguf ki ma mitzvah. He says, I remember that my father said that preparing for a mitzvah is more precious in God's eyes than the mitzvah itself. But to somebody who's not used to the writings of Chassidus, that sounds absolutely absurd. Certainly, you know, through the eyes of someone who's purely connected to halacha, how could that be? Preparing for a mitzvah can never equal a mitzvah. And he says that his father used to say that the preparations for a mitzvah are more precious in Hashem's eyes than the mitzvah itself. How could that be? So Leibel says, Yoyse miguf kima mitzvah ki asiyas ha-mitzvah nitzvah chliyos b'schus u'behiros b'lishem etz p'niyos. He says, because when you're performing the mitzvah itself, in order for the mitzvah to be acceptable by Hashem, to be something which is pleasing to Hashem, it has to be perfect. It has to be unblemished. It has to be 100%. You can't have one thought outside of that mitzvah. It has to be completely, completely focused on the mitzvah. And who could say that my heart is completely purified? However, when it comes to the time that you use preparing for mitzvahs, Kol nefesh Yisrael bevadei meichin umuchan huber tzayin l'kayim es ha-mitzvah k'sheyagi ezmane betachlis ha-shleim es ha-nirtzim ito. Reb Leibel says that during the time that you're preparing for mitzvah, you certainly, every Jew's intention is that this mitzvah should be perfectly fulfilled. When it comes down to l'maisa, when it comes to the moment of fulfilling the mitzvah, unfortunately it doesn't usually equal up to our anticipation or expectation. But when you're preparing for the mitzvah, you want to get a beautiful lulav and esrog, you want to get the sukkah should be beautiful. All these preparations indicate that when it comes time for the mitzvah, you're going to really do it. It's going to be unbelievable. Unfortunately, reality doesn't usually bear that out. And when it comes to the mitzvah itself, it's not a complete mitzvah. The mitzvah is not done wholeheartedly. But the hachanas are very precious in Hashem's eyes, because at that time of the hachana, every Jew wants only the best. Every Jew is excited and thinking this is going to be it. That's what he writes. Kol nefesh shel bevadei meichin umuchan hu beritzon lekayim et ha-mitzvah kshehigi hazman betachlis Hashem es ha-nirtzim ito. Ve'ezker, he says, I remember, ki danti lefanav zecher tzadik levracha, I remember when I mentioned to my father, to Reb Leibel, shehadvarim hakadoshim ha'elam mis'achdim im divrei Rabbeinu HaKadosh, HaRebbe Mikotsk. He says, I remember after my father taught this, I mentioned to him that this is similar to something that was taught by the great Rebbe from Kotsk. When I told my father, and I referred to a certain teaching in the writings of the Rebbe from Kotsk, that it was similar to this, he says, my father, Reb Leibel, was very pleased with that. Not like many people, they'd say, I can't believe it. I thought it was my own idea. That's not it, but the tzaddikim, they're very excited if it's connected and resembles the teaching of an earlier tzaddik. During these days, between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, a Jew is called Oisek B'mitzvah, means he's occupied with the mitzvah. He's not doing the mitzvah itself. He's preparing for the mitzvah. And preparing for the mitzvah is something which is without limitation. It's perfect because it's the desire to draw closer to Hashem. Which I mentioned to you last week, that very often in the Svarim, it's the comparisons between the period of engagement and the period of marriage. which even though, of course, in terms of the mitzias, marriage is a time of greater closeness than the engagement. Nevertheless, the Svarma Kedoshim tell us that there's something that's more holy about the engagement because it's the movement towards, it's the wanting. You see, wanting is infinite. Hoping for something is infinite. Looking forward to something, anticipating is without end. Unfortunately, reality, again, in that area as well, doesn't usually add up to one's anticipation. Doesn't usually, in married life, you know, when we speak to young couples that are engaged and their expectations, you know, no one wants to disappoint them or Chalila, or to burst the balloon. But it doesn't mean, God forbid, that in marriage there are many, many wonderful things in an intensification of love that comes over time. But that kind of an innocence and the type of an anticipation that's only there during the time of preparing can never be equaled. So, in a certain way. Because once something has already happened, so then there's something of the mystery, there's something of that shlemus that's not there. So therefore, Reb Leibel is telling us that in the time that a Jew prepares for mitzvahs, those days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot are referred to by Chazal as pure days. There are no sins. Hashem can't see anything wrong with a Jew during that time. Just like during engagement, you find very often, even though there are sechzuchim, very often Chasan and Mekalas have a lot of fights during the engagement. Because their parents are having all kinds of sechzuchim between them. So but very often what happens also, it's a similar thing. That during the time of an engagement, the girl could say this, the girl could say that, and the guy says, that's so cute. And he says, and she says, oh, it's so cute, you're adorable, you're wonderful. And then 5 years later, he's like, you know, would you please stop saying that? I find it very annoying. The same exact thing. I find it very annoying. It's getting on my nerves. It was so cute before you, his mom is charming. So what happened to the charm of that mom? Yeah, well, there are other things that aren't charming anymore either. Right? So, why? Because during the time of wanting, the hopes are complete, are at their highest. And they're moving towards something. Unfortunately, when it comes to B'shas Ma'isa, there's always something missing in the Shlemus. There's always something that's not perfect. But what you want is perfect. What you hope for is perfect. Therefore, during these days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, Chazal say that the Baruch Shalom doesn't see wrong with the Jewish people. Doesn't see faults with the Jewish people. Why? Because we're involved in the mitzvahs. We're engaged, kivyachal. We're working towards a mitzvah. We're preparing. It's the engagement. So kivyachal Hashem acts the same way. That during the time of engagement, everything is just right. Everything is beautiful. You're fine. Everything is good. Right? Everybody looks his best. Everybody says the nicest things. Everybody writes the nicest cards and gives the nicest gifts. And then the rest of their lives are saying, I can't believe you. How come you're not the way I remembered you? You're not the way I remembered you. What had happened to that fire and to the romance and so on. So that period is called the days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. That period of time. And from here, Reb Leibel says, comes the greatness, is the source, is the hint in the Torah for that greatness of preparing for any mitzvah. And to try to understand why Reb Leibel has spent so many hours learning before a mitzvah, preparing for a mitzvah, davening to be able to fulfill the mitzvah properly, going many times to the mikveh before he would perform the mitzvah. Coming out of the mikveh, saying simutam, going back into the mikveh. These are all the hachonis that to Reb Leibel have meant all that I'm yearning for, all that I'm trying to reach, and whether it'll be by the mitzvah, I don't know, but I want it to be. And during that time of wanting it to be, Hashem sees nothing wrong with the Jewish people. That's why he says, the second on the left-hand column, the entire Jewish people are called oiskim b'mitzvah. We're busy with mitzvahs. Which means, even if there are others who are helping him, even if there are others who are looking for your lulav and esrog, if there are others who are taking care to try to help with the sukkah, according to Allah, even if you're having other people help you, you're still considered to be involved in the mitzvah. Kila dvar mitzvah shulcha shel adam kemoisa. Certainly we know that when it comes to a dvar mitzvah, to performing a mitzvah, the Allah is that if you send a messenger, it's as if you yourself are doing it. Therefore we have a halacha that says that when you're busy with what, I mean, there are many complications in this halacha, but the general rule is that how Isaac be mitzvah potam and a mitzvah, that when you're busy doing a mitzvah, you're exempt from other mitzvahs. During the time that you're busy with the mitzvah, again, the word is osek. It doesn't say just being mekayim the mitzvah. When you are preoccupied with the mitzvah, then you are exempt from other mitzvahs. Even if you're only preparing. The most obvious example, Hashem Yirachem, is when it comes time when someone passes away. So you all know that during the time that's called Aninus, that strange time between the death and the burial, you know that not only is there an exemption, but it's forbidden to be mekayim mitzvahs. The individual is expected to be preoccupied with preparing for the mitzvah of burying his loved one. That means you're supposed to be busy preparing, making the calls, doing what's necessary. And you're potter from mitzvahs during that time. You're exempt from mitzvahs. Even the hachanas. He gives a more cheerful example. So he says, Af ma'isaz man eno isa oit shum mitzvah rak hachana ke'inyin ha'hoylech b'derech l'dvar mitzvah. When you're on your way to the mitzvah, right? When you're, according to halacha, if you're on your way, you're on your way up to Yerushalayim. It's the Shalosh Regalim. You're Eila Regal. You're going to Yerushalayim for Yontif. And the time of the Zabes HaMikdash, you're Eila Regal. So every step that you're taking is called Oseg B'Mitzvah. You're involved in the mitzvah. Because I'm on my way to Yerushalayim. All preparations for mitzvahs are called, I'm on my way to Yerushalayim. Every preparation is that. Therefore, the Jew who's on his way to Yerushalayim, he has a halacha of being Oseg B'Mitzvah. How that plays itself out, halachically, what's he exempt from and so on, I'm not getting into right now. But up here, halacha, we do apply this concept, even though you're not actually doing the mitzvah. Because you would say that the only time I should be exempt from other mitzvahs is when I'm actually bringing the sacrifice. If I'm in the Beis HaMikdash, but that's not true. Even the hachana, even my movement towards the mitzvah is considered to be what? Oisik b'mitzvah. I'm involved with the mitzvah. I'm not there yet, but I'm on my way. And that makes the person exempt from other mitzvahs. Because he says, Shuraka achana l'mitzvah, yakar ma'id l'fnei Hashem Yisbarach, it's very precious in Hashem's eyes, ad shepotiros melasas mitzvah acheres, and you're exempt from fulfilling another mitzvah. So here we have, inside the teachings of Rabbi Leibler, we have a taste of what he understood to be the hint in the Torah itself for how important hachana it is to prepare. It is to prepare for mitzvahs. Therefore, coming back to the story of Reb Leibler's life, and I'm going to tell some stories tonight, there are certain mitzvahs in Reb Leibler's life where we see that he was particularly devoted to, and his hachanas were lamalam and ateva, were supernatural. I already mentioned davening, also Shabbos. Shabbos, almost every piece of Reb Leibler's, in Torah Semis and Imamis, almost every piece, Reb Leibler comes back to Shabbos. He talks about Shabbos. To the point, if you take a look on the last page, we're going to do a lot of Torahs about Shabbos, but I just want to show you something interesting on the last page of what you have, that's taken from the Shevet Miyehuda, that's from the son, from Rabbi Avram, the son of Reb Leibler. And he writes, there are many times in his Svarim that where the son writes about things that he remembers hearing from his father or seeing by the father, by Reb Leibler. And these are particularly interesting. He says, Zecharani, you see on the bottom right-hand side? On the fourth page. Zecharani, Shekrei Kedushas Mar Abba Marin Kadisha. I remember that my holy father, Hikpid Ma'oid, he was very makpid. I don't know how you translate makpid into English. Particular. He was extremely particular. About what? V'shomar lefamim eiza anoche shal ish b'shabbos kodesh. He would become very upset if he heard a Jew krechzing on Shabbos. Krechzing, you know what I mean? Like being tired or having a hard time. Reb Leibler would be very makpid. He would be very upset. You weren't allowed to krechz on Shabbos in his presence. So the son is trying to explain that. What did my father have against krechzing? It's one of the most favorite pastimes of the Jewish peoples, the krechz. So what is it on Shabbos a Jew shouldn't krechz? Huh? V'nos yoga and v'anocha. Very good. It says b'feirish. V'nos yoga. That's fantastic. I'll have to see you remember. That's good. V'nos yoga and v'anocha. It says also in the Zmirs, right, that that all sorrow and all anocha, all sighing, all krechsing has to go away on Shabbos. That's right. So he says, V'yesh leimer, Shebiyoyser, he says, Ein shum mokum la anocha. He says, Ein shum mokum la anocha. Why is that? That there's no place for an anocha, for a krechs, for a sigh, b'Shabbos Kodesh Zeh. He says, particularly this Shabbos, which was Shabbos, Pashas Mishpatim, which was Pashas Shkolim. Well, we're not going to go into that, but listen to what he says. Kinuch loyma bekavanos ha'kadosh, we can explain. Al pi ha'yidu ma'amorim zal. Chazal say, anocha sheveres chatzi gufi shalodim. Chazal say that a krechs breaks half of the person's body. It seems harmless to us, but when you give a sigh from a deep place, a krechs, that a krechs breaks sheveres chatzi gufi shalodim. It breaks half of the person. V'ahaynu ki kol guf ha'adam hu murkav mishnei chatzoyim. He says the body of a person is composed of two parts. Chetzi of echad hu ha'nesham ha'kedoshu. The first part of man is what? His neshama. The first part of the human being is his neshama, his soul. Shuchelek elokim imal, which is a portion of God himself, ha'mechayim ha'kayimus ha'guf, that gives life to the body. So that's part of the body. The neshama, the soul. The chetzi v'sheni, the second part of the body, hu haguf v'kol chelkei haguf, means the body, the physical body itself. In other words, the invisible part of man's life is the soul that gives life to the body. That's one half. The visible part of man's physical life is the actual body, its limbs and organs. She says, v'ha'anocha haynu sibas ha'anocha chas v'sholom, Hurak l'shabres eschesreinus odom aboy mitzad achatzi shel haguf. Mezor rak mitzad achol. He says, what does an anoch, what does a krechts accomplish? What does it mean when a person sighs? He says that's to somehow eliminate, to somehow diminish those chesreinus, those things that a person is suffering from in the physical part of his life. In other words, you had a rough day at work, you give a krechts. What does that krechts mean? The krechts means you're looking at the entire day and all that happened, and you're saying one big yamach shemai. Yamach shemai. May it all be erased. That's a krechts. A krechts erases. A krechts is a sigh. Rabbi Nachman talks at great length about the Indian of creation took place, of course, with Hashem exhaling, breathing into man. There is something, of course, taking in the breath and exhaling. So there's a way that a person is the anocha, the krechs, is to say that I'm trying to erase that part of my life that causes me pain and aggravation. That's the anocha, that's the krechs. V'zehu rak mitzad achol. Rabbi Avraham says that's only during the 6 days of the week. That's only through the 6 days of the week. Nitzrach lefamim l'shabbos eis besibas anocha v'anocha chas v'sholom. So sometimes during the 6 days of the week when a person goes through In physical life, there's terrible misery and suffering and disappointment and so on. So during the 6 days of the week, Chas v'Shalom, he says, it's not good to be said. It's never good to be said. But sometimes during the 6 days of the week, you need to give a krechs to blow away some of the tzaras, to get rid of some of the tzaras, to breathe in, to breathe out, to get rid of the problems. Aval b'Shabbos Kodesh, he says. But on Shabbos, Shul Yom Din Nishmosa, which in the Zohar is called the Day of the Soul, Shabbos is when the neshama takes over completely. Shabbos is the day of the neshama. So he says that on Shabbos, Yom the Nishmosa, then, Hachoyim Mishapach Letzura. On Shabbos, there's nothing physical about us. We eat, we sleep. But the body of a Jew is transformed into something much greater. That's the neshama Yaseira. That's what Rashi says, that even the expensiveness that comes with eating special foods and so on, and being with people that we love, all of that is connected to the neshama of a Jew. That's the neshama Yaseira. The additional soulfulness of Shabbos. So he says that on Shabbos, the physical is transformed. Mishapach letzura v'gam chelki haguf mishapach li eskula kodesh l'Hashem. Bebchinis neshama, the entire body of a Jew is exalted. It's lifted up to a level of being kodesh l'Hashem, holy and sanctified to Hashem. So ein shum mokim l'anoch l'sibosecha. What are you krechsing about? You're krechsing that what? The davening took 10 minutes longer. That's a krechs. You're trying to break up a nishmas kolchai. You're trying to break up a kesa yidnulacha. What are you breaking up? You're breaking up what? An anoche has the purpose of shattering something that was disappointing. of erasing something that shouldn't have been, that didn't have to be. Shabbos is neshama. Shabbos is yom din shmosa. So why would a person krechs on Shabbos? To do what? She says there's no place for a krechs on Shabbos. There's no cause for a krechs on Shabbos. Unless there's something about Shabbos that's not pleasing to you. Unless there's something about Shabbos that makes you tired or annoyed or whatever it might be. You should see, go to Yerushalayim, you go to the, like, by the Rabbi Arulach Chassidim. And go see what a Shabbos is. Like, we feel that if shul is supposed to end at 11:15, it became at 11:19. So that everybody's making a cheshbon that the rabbi owes me another 4 minutes, or the chazan owes me another 4 minutes. I'm gonna get him back, or I'm gonna leave. I'm never coming back. 4 minutes adds up over a month. You know how much it comes out? It comes out 16 minutes. A whole month. It was stolen from my Shabbos menucha. And all these crazy cheshbonis that I'm of course exaggerating, but in subtle ways they're there. Right? Go in Yerushalayim, you see Jews that Friday night, right? Through the night. We'll talk about, you know, when Reb Leibel and the Chassidim were coming for every Chassid came for the Tish, which was usually around 1 or 2 in the morning Friday night. You can still see this in certain places. With Shabbos is Yomid and Nishmasa, and the whole day is a day of learning. There's a student of mine that's in Stalin. He's by the Stalina Rebbe. You should see what a Shabbos. If you want to belong to the Chassidus, if you want to be a member of the clan, of the Chevra, you have a set schedule for Shabbos that allows you to eat with your family. I don't think more than a half hour or 45 minutes after that, you're back in Beis Medrash. And that's the rest of your day. That's it. And then Friday night, Tish, Shabbos day, Tish, Shalosh Shudas Tish, Motzei Shabbos Tish, together with the Tzaddik. So we look at it and say, that's not Shabbos, it's not Menucha. Shabbos Menucha, that couldn't be what Hashem wanted. Right? So we're very far from this. Therefore, if you or I would be up 3 in the morning standing by some Rebbe's Tish, we'd be krechsing the whole time. And looking for, you know, how do you get out without anybody seeing you? But the Avoid of Shabbos, which is Yom HaNishmas, which is the day of the soul, where does it come from? To feel overwhelmed by what? Davening takes a little bit extra. If davening takes a little bit extra, so then there's a whole commotion and and everything has to be just so that I have Menuchas HaGuf. Because in the life of a Jew whose entire Shabbos is only the Guf, only means that my body should rest, so then it certainly is very annoying if anything is stolen from his physical life. Because Shabbos is a time only for the body. But for the Jew whose Shabbos is for the Neshama, if your Shabbos is the Yom HaNishmasa, then Adarabba comes out the opposite, that you're nervous about time being stolen from the soul. Not time that's stolen from your body, time that's stolen from your Neshama. How much you could learn on a Shabbos. And I've already been saying this in shul. You know, I started saying this, I'm going to say it throughout the winter. The people that go to sleep Friday night, I understand everybody's tired. They go to sleep Friday night, 7 o'clock, and they sleep till the next morning. What kind of thing is that? What kind of Shabbos is that? The whole Shabbos went to the... Because then by Shabbos day, what's left? You dive and you come back from shul. By the time you finished eating, and then you're making another cheshbon of how am I going to get an hour in, so that there's no Shabbos. Came out with the exception of eating and being in shul, there was no Shabbos. So that a person should go to sleep Friday night at 7 o'clock, it makes no difference how tired he is. So I mentioned you try to rest a little bit. You rest for a half hour, for an hour, and you get up and you learn. You spend time doing things that are real. It's a Yom HaNishmas. It's a day of the Neshama. It's a whole different perspective. So for people like ourselves in these days, it's very hard for us to imagine Shabbos being such a way of being Yom HaNishmas. When my father described to me the schedule of what Shabbos was like, you know, Shabbos in Hungary, where my parents are from, Shabbos was the day that you were fahered in yeshiva. You weren't off from school on Shabbos. It was the most difficult day, because Shabbos was when the rov of the city, all the boys in the yeshiva had to come, and Shabbos was the faher. Not written, of course. Written would have been easy. They didn't have that, but it was a faher. It was by the rov of the city, where the boys had to come to Bis Medrash, and it was a terrifying thing. And the whole night before was spent chazring, was spent learning. So to us, that sounds like that's torture. Leave the kids alone. any yeshiva that would have that would be closed down nowadays. You couldn't even get over. How could you? It's poor education. It's hurting the children, and so on and so forth. Well, mamash, we're far away from the what it means. Shabbos, what's a Yom HaNishmasa, the day of the Neshama. That's what Rav Avram is saying. He says,
It's a ain't shumak manachas yibas chashom ki me'etzem kedusha say yoyim nishber chatzi aguf shumitzad agufonis. You don't need a krechz to, you don't need a krechz to eliminate physical, that part of you that's physical. It doesn't, it's not there on Shabbos. Shouldn't be. So you don't have to krechz. Shabbos is neshama. V'nisha kula b'b'chinis neshama l'sanag l'shem, and all you have left is the neshama to delight in Hashem. V'yaysa adam kula b'b'chinis neshama shuchelek elukim yimal, which is a portion of God himself. So a little bit of a taste of what of how Reb Leibel looked at Shabbos. That Reb Leibel was makbid of a Jew at krechz on Shabbos. As I said before, Reb Leibel would not begin the tish Friday night before midnight, and the tish would go on usually until dawn, sometimes till sunrise. The table the singing with the Torah would continue with the chassidim throughout the night until Shabbos morning. When the Olam generally, the rest of the Olam generally at that time would then go to the mikveh. There would be a half hour, an hour of sleep, then to prepare by learning chassidus, and then to go into the tefillahs of Shabbos. And that's how they lived Shabbos after Shabbos, year after year, their entire lives. Those that were attached to the tzaddik. Yom Tovim, I'm not going to go into that. It's a whole separate discussion. I mean, thousands of people were coming out to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur of Leibel usually did not finish Yom Kippur until 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night. That's when Yom Kippur was finished. Therefore, I'm not even going to think about that one. But Yom Kippur was finished 11 or 12, but the Shamus, Reb Leibel would indicate to the Shamus that for those who are older or are not well, that they should go into the side base medrash, and they should finish the davening, and they should go ahead and they should make havdalah, and they should eat. But it's not only that. Reb Leibel's davening would usually finish somewhere between 11 and 12 o'clock at night, Motzei Yom Kippur, and when he would come back, he would not eat until sometime the next day. The reason for that was that he refused to eat until he was able to make up the missing piyutim that he had to rush through. You know that if you look in the machzor, there's a lot of small print that we don't say. And Reb Leibel would not eat until he finished saying every single one. So he would come back at 11, 12 o'clock at night. Yom Kippur would not sleep, would not eat, and would spend the rest of the night finishing up what was in the machzor, and only sometime the next day he would have something to eat. That's how Reb Leibel kept Yom Kippur. Kodesh L'Hashem. Now, I mentioned to you that Reb Leibel himself never met the Seer of Lublin, the Chayzer. He couldn't have met the Chayzer. Despite that, Reb Leibel was completely attached to the teachings and of the Chayzer, and he held the Chayzer to be like his Rebbe. And he held that his Rebbe, the Ishbitzer, the Meir Shiloach, was the greatest interpreter of the teachings of the Chayzer. He held that the Ishbitzer's, all of the Ishbitzer's teachings were a commentary on the teachings of the Ishbitzer's Rebbe, the Seer of Lublin, the Chayzer of Lublin. Therefore, we know that on that day, when Reb Tzadok finally convinced Reb Leibel that he should become Rebbe, that Reb Leibel locked himself in the room Me'ace La'ace for over 24 hours, Reb Leibel was preparing to accept upon himself the responsibility of being the Rebbe of the Chassidim. So during that time, it's brought down in the Sfarm that all he had in his room, he was by himself, just with this Sfarm of the Chayzer of Lublin. And all of his preparations to become the Rebbe were using the Sfarm from the Chayzer. And his son, Rabbi Avram, wrote in the introduction to Teres Emes that they chose to call the Sfarm of Rabbi Leibel Teres Emes and Imre Emes. Teres Emes and Imre Emes, why? So Rabbi Avram, the son, wrote in the introduction, Leo is Shem HaSefer HaKadosh HaZeh, Me'ein Shem HaSefer Divrei Emes. Because the famous Sefer of the Seer of Lublin of the Chayzer was called Divrei Emes, words of truth. Therefore, the son writes, Mirabenu Isha Lekim Kaddish Venor HaRebi HaKaddish HaRishim Lublin. Therefore, since my father, Reb Leibel, saw his life as an effort, as an attempt to explain, to continue in the ways of the Seer of Lublin, therefore he said, we decided to name the Svarm also using the word Emes, because the Chayzer's Sefer was Divrei Emes, so we named our father's Svarm Imre Emes and Taurus Emes, because it was seen as a continuation of the teachings and the ways of the Seer of Lublin of the Chayzer. every single Friday night, before Reb Leibel would come in for the Tish, would come in for the Shabbos meal and to say Torah, he would spend at least a few minutes before he would walk into the Chassidim, he would spend a few minutes looking into one of the Svarim of the Seer of Lublin, looking into the Chayzes Svarim. Even if it would be for a minute, he would not come to the table unless he would first look into the Sefer of the Svarim of the Chayzes. It's brought down in Maise, Rabbi Avram, his son, brought down that one time one of the grandsons of the Chayzer, Rabbi Meshulam Zush from Lublin, one of the Chayzer's grandchildren, was by Rabbi Leibel's Tish, had come to the Friday night to be by Rabbi Leibel's table. And he reached out his hand for a L'chaim. He reached out his hand to give a L'chaim to Rabbi Leibel, as is the custom. And Rabbi Leibel pulled him over. He gave him a L'chaim, and he pulled him over, and Rabbi Leibel took his hand. And Rabbi Leibel held on to Rabbi Meshulam Zushi, the Chayzer's grandson. He held on to Rabbi Leibel held on to his hand. And he asked, and he was holding it for a minute or two. And then he asked, do you ever remember, was there ever a time that your grandfather, the Chayzer, held this hand? That the Chayzer held this hand, your grandfather. And Rabbi Meshulam Zushi said, yes. And Rabbi Leibel became very excited. And Rabbi Leibel says in the Svarim, said the following, Oydel Hashem, I give thanks to Hashem, Shezachisi lecha es biyad echad mi bonav, Asha'och ze biyadu ha-kadoshu shalai Rebbe Mublin. I give thanks to Hashem to have the schus, the privilege of holding on to one of the hands of the grandchildren of the Chayzer that the Chayzer himself had once held. You get an idea of how he looked at the Chayzer. There was a certain tremendous Talmud Chacham, a great Gaon, a great genius, that was once that had been going to Reb Leibel, and he once told Reb Tzadik, he said to Reb Tzadik that Reb Leibel at the table, when he was saying Torah in the name of the Chayzer of Lublin, that suddenly Reb Leibel stopped saying the Torah, and he threw his head back for quite some time, and it took a while until he was able, finally afterwards, to finish with the Chayzer, the teaching of the Chayzer. So this great Talmud Chacham asked Reb Tzadik HaKohen, what happened to Reb Leibel? Why did he interrupt the teaching from the Chayzer? And why was he, for such a long time, why did he seem to be detached from this world? So, Reb Tzadik said the following, it's brought down in the Sfarim the following. Madu atam espoli al kach, why are you so shocked by this? Why are you wondering? Hale Omru Chazal taught, Ha'im Eshmur B'Shem Omroi, Chazal said that if you say some teaching, if you say some Torah in the name of the one who said it, you quote the person, if you're saying something in the name of the tzaddik who said it, Yira bala shmua kilo emel negdo. You should see the one who said it as if he's standing in your presence. As if he's standing in front of you. And he says, V'chein yididi hakadosh, and so it is with my holy friend, Reb Leibel. Kasha bola haske divre harebi m'lublin. That when my friend Reb Leibel mentions a teaching of the Rebbe from Lublin, and he v'liv noisalav divrei teroso, and he builds upon the Chayzer's teachings, his own teachings. You should know that he was able, when he does that, he brings the Seer of Lublin into this world. He brings the Chayzer mamish into this world. And when Reb Leibel is saying a Torah from the Chayzer, he mamish is able to see the Seer of Lublin, the Chayzer from Lublin. And he was listening to the Chayzer himself explain his own teaching. That's why Reb Leibel took so long. He was bringing the Chayzer into this world. And when the Chayzer came into this world, of course no one else would see this, Reb Leibel was listening, was hearing how the Chayzer was explaining his own teaching. And only after the Chayzer explained the teaching, then would Reb Leibel tell it over to the Olam. Now this brings us to the subject of stories about Reb Leibel. Everybody wants to hear Meisim. It's good to hear stories of Tzaddikim. There are thousands of stories of Reb Leibel. The problem, however, is that Reb Leibel had a tremendous dislike for miracles, telling over miracle stories of rabbis. He didn't go for that. He wanted always to hear the teachings of tzaddikim, and he himself, because he detested all of that, and he felt that it was giving into certain things, by all the chassidim telling over miracles and exaggerating things and so on, So Reb Leibler, although he loved telling stories about teachings and about things that happened to the tzaddikim, but he was not into telling maifsim, miracle stories. He did not care for that. And therefore, although there is an oral tradition of many miracles that took place in by Reb Leibler, there is such an oral, as much as he tried to conceal them, there's an oral tradition, but he did not give permission for anything to be written or printed. And as a matter of fact, there was a certain sefer that was printed by one of the children of one of the Hasidim, by a grandchild of one of the Hasidim before World War II. There was a sefer with stories, and the grandchildren of Reb Leibler heard about this, and they insisted that all of them be burned. And to the best of our knowledge, there were only a few things that were copied down from that sefer of stories from Reb Leibler. The grandchildren did not want these to be publicized. But Baruch Hashem, there are some of them that escaped the fire, and there were some that were remembered and handed down in families of the Chassidim. let me preface this by saying that if someone's familiar, if you're in the slightest bit familiar with the Svarim, the teachings of Reb Leibler, I mentioned last week that besides Rabbi Nachman Breslover, in modern times, maybe the Slonim Svarim, you don't find a sefer that has as much hischazkas, chizik, to give chizik to Yidden Jews, as much as the Svarim of Reb Leibler. And also, in all of Reb Leibler's Svarim, he constantly, in almost every piece, he comes back to the subject of Refuah and Yeshua, that Jews should be well, should be healthy and should be well, should bring them a refuah. And he somehow ties into every parsha. Into every parsha, he's able to tie in the concept of refuah, of cure and of a healing and so on. And Reb Leibler saw the responsibility of a Rebbe. Aside from what we've been talking about the last 2 weeks, we were learning pieces in Parshas Korah. The Reb Leibler saw that the responsibility of a Rebbe was to daven for the Chassidim. And the responsibility of a Rebbe, for all Jews. And the responsibility of the Rebbe was to try to bring refuahs and yeshuas, to bring healing, to bring cures into the world. And he saw this as a major job of the Rebbe. Very different from the Kotzkos. You know, the Kotzkos, that wasn't what he wanted, that wasn't what he spoke about. But Reb Leibler, every Torah, when you learn his Torahs, you could read each one of his Torahs as a tefillah. You could daven them. The Torahs, you could daven them. They sound like a tefillah. So therefore, we have some stories of encounters that he had with Jews and how much he tried, how desperately he tried, in many ways, to help Jews. So I'm going to tell you that there's a sefer that was printed last year, where some of these stories that remain are found. It's a sefer that's very hard to get. A friend of mine lent it to me. It came out last year in Eretz Yisrael. There are some stories here, and I'm going to share with you a few of the stories, but not all of them. There must be around 25. I'll tell you. Maybe six or seven of these interesting stories, because they're also a reflection on the kind of person Reb Leibler was and the great love that he had for the Jewish people. So I'll tell you first, as a maaseh, with a certain woman from the city of Krasnik that was near Lublin, that she all of a sudden came up with this idea that she wanted to convert to Christianity. So even nowadays, that would be shocking. Certainly, in those days, she was married to a Chassidish Yid, to a God-fearing Jew, and she decided that she wanted to convert. And because of that, she left her husband, she left her children, and she went to a church in Lublin. And there, they were of course very excited, and they were preparing for the baptism that was to take place in a few days. I guess she didn't have to spend so much time learning the halachas or anything else. So she was preparing for the conversion. And she was staying in this place, some sort of a convent by the church. The husband had done anything he could. He sent this, he sent messages, he tried. There was nothing he could do to bring her back home. And even though he didn't live in Lublin, he lived in a village near Lublin, he went and he rented an apartment in Lublin, near the place over there, near the church. He was hoping somehow that maybe he would meet her. Maybe they would let her out. And they weren't letting her out. But maybe they would let her out of this place, and he would be able to cry and talk to her and something to convince her to come back home and to forget this craziness. He also had a relative in Lublin, this Jew, And he asked the relative that when he wasn't there, that the relative should be able to. So this man, the husband stayed by, he would stay there and watch all day long. He couldn't get, it was like this big complex. He couldn't get into the church. So when he wasn't able to be there, he would have one of his relatives they would take turns, the relatives that he had in Lublin. And he was standing there and waiting. And he says, if you see my wife, quickly come and get me. But this was going on for a while and nothing happened. So he went in. He went into to Reb Leibele. And he began to cry to Reb Leibele. And he spent Shabbos there in the Beis Medrash of Reb Leibele. And he told him the whole Ma'aseh. And then he came again by the second meal. And then he came again by Shalosh Udos, by the third meal. And each time Reb Leibele was saying Torah, this poor Jew whose wife had run away, he was crying, and he would have an outburst in the middle of the meal, and people didn't know the whole story. Finally, Motzei Shabbos, right after Havdalah, the relative comes running. One of the relatives comes running and says that all of a sudden I saw your wife by the window, standing by the window, and she was screaming and making signs, get me out of this place, save me, rescue me. So so Reb Leibele told them quickly to go, and they got a chevra together, and I don't know how they did it, but they figured out a way how to climb up, and somehow in the night, in secret, and they were able to take her out, and she had like a shagas, you know, she said, and she went back home, and she was with her children. Now, when they got her out from this covenant or wherever it was, so they came, the Rebbe said, when this happens, if you get her out, please come and tell me. So they came there in the night, and they went into Reb Leibele and told Reb Leibele that she's okay. She's back. She's going back home. So the Reb Leibele said, I knew that it was going to be immediately after Havdalah. Why? Because when I was making Havdalah and I was holding the kais, I was holding the cup, and I said, Hamavda Mekarsh Lachol, that Hashem makes a distinction between Shabbos and the days of the week. And I said, Ben Yisrael La'amim, Ben the Jewish people and all the nations of the world, so I poured all of my thoughts into your wife, that Hashem Baruch should help her remember the difference between a Jew and the nations of the world. And it was right after Havdalah, it was at that time of Havdalah she started to scream, get me out of here. So that's a ma'isim. I think that we'll stop here only because the ma'isim take a little bit longer, and so we'll stop here, and next week we'll go to four or five other ma'isim, and then we'll discuss the events that led up to the Estalkus, to the death, to the Ptira of Reb Leibele. Yashkai.